You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Public Radio. The following program has been made possible by Replacement AirPods, sold in single packs or packs of 30, because let's be realistic. And Marathons, parades no one enjoys. And Jennifer Connelly in the movie Career Opportunities. Holy shit. And now, an evening with the authors. I am your host, Dana Glass. Well, hello, loyal listeners, and welcome to the season 2 finale of our program. It has been quite a ride this season, but we have made it to the end together. As we do not have a producer, I am scraping the barrel for our sponsors. Luckily, there were some documents left behind before Natalie's demise. In this episode, I will sit down and speak to the gentleman cat burglar, Marcel Guimont. After the interview, we'll immediately follow with a reading from his memoir. Please enjoy. For over 15 years, Marcel Guimont was known throughout the world as the foremost gentleman cat burglar. Marcel lived an international life of luxury from Barcelona to Dubai. In his debut memoir, he shared his true origins as that of a boy from Tampa, Florida, named Toby Moffat. Now, he is sitting with me to talk about his multi-part memoir. Thank you for joining me, Marcel Guimont.
Yes. Very good.
Now, Marcel...
Dana, first of all, we know each other. Please, call me Toby. We are friends.
Marcel, you list your occupation as being a gentleman cat burglar. What makes a gentleman cat burglar different from a common burglar?
Yes, I appreciate you calling them commoner. That's not a bridge I like to cross first in most social interactions, but you've really set the tone here, and I appreciate that. I believe what makes a commoner burglar so much different from a gentleman cat burglar is that a commoner burglar just doesn't have the panache and the execution that a gentleman cat burglar has. A gentleman cat burglar, it's not so much what you've stolen, but the reputation for stealing it. Whereas a commoner burglar will certainly come in and take something from you. A gentleman cat burglar will leave you with an experience or some sort of remnant of our passing to linger in your life. Perhaps it is a cryptic, life-altering saying said to a young child catching a glimpse of me as I slink across his parents' veranda. A cryptic saying so powerful that in that moment he commits himself to a life of luxurious larceny and decides to grow his first mustache. Or it could simply just be something as an incredibly erotic encounter with an Austrian banker's wife. I mean, how was I supposed to know that they kept the tanning bed in the garage? Oh, Dana. Oh, the only thing pulling out that evening was his Maserati full of art. Yes. Oh, my, that was...
Oh,
I need to get back to Austria.
Oh, my. This is easy. Fascinating, and it is a lot of information very quickly. Now, if I can...
Do you mind if I vape?
Oh, well, I mean, it's your home. I don't know that...
Well, I try to be mindful of guests.
Oh, ooh, it's very elegant. Maybe I should start vaping.
Yep.
So, if I can unpack
Florida
what you...
Florida habit I picked up. Go on.
If I can unpack what you were saying, the boy was you, or you met a boy? Did you encounter a gentleman cat burglar during your childhood?
Not exactly, Dana, no. I would say two moments defined my life of theft. First was seeing a man get shot outside a Chuck E. Cheese in Tampa, Florida when I was 7 years old.
Oh.
The man had stolen a large amount of the gold tokens from a storage closet and made a run for it. His poor luck, in the parking lot he ran into a plainclothes police officer trying to make the most of his shared custody agreement. You know, everyone loves a fun dad, Dana. Fun dads are fun.
I've heard. But,
like a child, the policeman saw the gold coloring of the coins and immediately attributed immense wealth to them. And he pulled out his service revolver and emptied it into the man's chest. I believe he shot him 4 times.
Oh.
The man stumbled back, grabbing my shirt sleeve as he fell to the ground, and he pulled me down on top of him, and he used his last breath to just sort of mutter the same saying into my face as it went on. He kept saying, "We are all rats," several times over, and then he finally used his last breath to cough blood into my mouth. Father made me sleep in a tent in the backyard for a week. He was afraid I'd caught the hobo fever.
Wow, that is quite the experience for a 7-year-old child. The excitement alone with having been taken to Chuck E. Cheese, I can only imagine. And then to have witnessed a grisly homicide and, mm-hmm. of course, the we are rats, and the blood in the mouth, all very...
Well, the blood in the mouth was not so concerning. I mean, it was Florida. There's a certain amount of blood in mouth.
I see. I've never been. So the first defining moment of your life being when the man was shot and killed in front of you at 7 years old in the Chuck E. Cheese parking lot. And what would you say was the second defining moment?
The second was watching my older brother Kenny offering to organize everyone's scholastic reader orders in elementary school. Kenny then took all the rewards points and bought this big, stretchy, sticky hand that he used to snag packs of cigarettes from behind the counters of convenience stores. It was clever, multi-layered, involved a grand deception and a gadget. It was some of the baddest shit I'd ever seen.
Oh, okay. Now this one I could relate to. In the beginning, the Scholastic Readers, I was very well known throughout my school of not so much ordering, but waiting until the other children had discarded theirs, realizing that books were not nearly as fun as the other knickknacks. They could buy compasses or...
There was a great tracing book that you could trace with. It made you feel like an artist.
Yeah, I never had an eye for art. I more just
I traced a bird. Mostly I just did that same bird a lot.
Yeah.
And then I lost the book. And I thought, well, I'm done. But then I found one of the first birds that I did.
Yeah.
And I traced that.
Did you name that bird?
I didn't. It was hard to name them after a while because there were so many of them.
So we have now gathered the two defining moments. The first, the murder in the Chuck E. Cheese parking lot. And the second, when your older brother, Kenny, devised a master scheme to get himself a sticky hand to get cigarettes from convenience stores. Now, the only clue I am missing is how are these two moments connected?
Well, you see, my brother Kenny showed me how to commit a crime with style. And the man getting shot at the Chuck E. Cheese is just something I can never get out of my mind. It haunts my dreams. It's part of everything I do. It's with me in my most mundane moments. When I'm just eating alone, perhaps with just a plain piece of toast, I see the man and I can taste his blood in my mouth. Perhaps this is the hobo fever Daddy was talking about.
Oh, wow. But things have really progressed since then. I mean, we are here in the east wing of your luxurious home here.
Yes, this is all done in, it looks like teak.
Teak.
I'm not sure because the lights are off.
Is that the wood? Is teak a wood?
I believe it is. I think you have to go to an island to get it.
It looks wonderful.
Yes,
it's
said
varnished.
I want something far.
And bring me the teak.
Maybe.
A man of taste. And I do find it remarkable that a man of your status owning a home that's this beautiful, it certainly is putting the studio apartment that I share with my cousin to shame. But you still are a salt of the earth man from Florida. And
these sconces are from one of the first Hooters.
Oh, Hooters.
I had to
sconces.
Buy them in an auction.
I've heard that their wings are fantastic.
They are quite good.
It seems their wings are rivaled only by their sconces. They are beautiful.
No, they decided they didn't like these, so they took them down and put up different ones that look like a fleur-de-lis, I believe, or a lyre.
I have to admit
I dated a woman from France for a month.
I've been trying to follow and gather what a sconce is just through the conversation and glancing around the room, but I'm still not sure which of the ornaments that we're talking about.
So I've been thinking about this, and I've got it narrowed down to a couple things, I'm pretty sure.
Uh-huh.
So I think it might be the thing that has the light in it.
Okay,
I felt like that's what they were really circling around when they were talking about sconces.
Yeah, the Hooters sconces, you said. I don't care what they are, just put them up.
As you can see, there's an ornate hook that the tapestry hangs from, and it could be that.
Yeah, that looks as well. I don't know if that's gold-plated or if that's solid gold or...
Now, when you think Hooters, you don't think tapestries.
No, typically I would...
Well, no, Bud Light.
Bud Light tapestries, I would imagine, yes. I don't know if jerseys are tapestries if they're hung on the wall, if they then become a tapestry.
Well, it's more of a banner, actually.
A banner. A symbol of pride.
I believe it would be a banner, yes.
Something sort to of all an gather behind, yes, yeah.
Guess how strong I am.
Yeah, I'm...
This is my number,
and... I never understood the numbers in sports. I don't know. There's only so many numbers, and they only use double-digit numbers. Surely they run out of numbers.
I think you can...
Have there only ever been 99 basketball players?
No.
I've never watched any sports.
No, I think there's 99 now.
99 players currently?
Probably.
What happens if they bring 100 into the league? Does someone have to go?
Well, I think they just don't let some of them play.
Oh, the double numbers don't get to play. Not they all have double numbers, but then is a single one and a zero one, is that the same player? Is that the same? I feel like we're getting very off track.
Well, then I think you have to go to the uniform people, and that's a style choice. Do we put a zero in front of the one, or do we let people sort of figure out what's going on?
Yeah, I'd like
put
that.
The zero. I mean, I've been to some games. I'd put the zero.
Put the zero in front of the one. That's the taste of one Marcel Guimont. Now, I do want to point out that you're a man of many talents. Mm-hmm. You're, as we sit here and speak, you're conducting an eloquent interview about a number of topics.
Yes.
As well as working on the electricity of your own home.
Yes, there was a mouse.
A mouse?
In the wall.
The mouse was in the wall.
Yes, he was in the wall.
And he?
Was... he was making a pungent stew on his little stove that he has in there.
A mouse has a stove in the wall.
Yes.
And you had to then...
I knocked on his little door.
He had a door.
They usually do to keep the cat out.
Now, if he had a door, then why did you have to make this rough... hole with, I'm assuming,
well,
chisel
asked,
and hammer.
Well, I asked, can we do anything about the stew? And he said, well, I don't have any ventilation in here. If you want to install just a tiny little exhaust fan, something tasteful in scale with the rest of his little house.
But then you opted for the 3x3 hole.
Well, I had to get in there too. I couldn't go through his little mouse door, Dana.
You're right. I'm being
that's
silly.
That's a tiny
now.
Little door. I could probably get a hand in there, but then I wouldn't be able to see what was going on, and he could do any number of mouse shenanigans in there. He could sort of chop it all up in a bunch of slices, and you'd see the bone and everything, and then it'd sort of zip back together when I pull it out.
Growing up, we had a lot of mice in our house, but I never did see what they did behind the walls. I guess I always assumed it was some sort of capital critters situation.
Yes, I believe it is. I don't believe they're that interested in our government, though.
Mm.
They're mice.
They probably have their own governments.
I imagine the one that I found with the small home might have been the smartest mouse in the world.
Yeah, I guess they don't usually have ovens, do they?
No, it was very peculiar.
I don't know much about mice, I'm realizing right now.
I don't think I know anything either. If I had to guess.
But you're installing a ventilation hole, and then the wiring, I guess you are going to have to power the fan is why you're...
That mouse might not have actually been there. Oh. I cut into a Freon line earlier.
Oh.
And...
Oh, I see.
Yes.
And now, but I didn't... Am I breathing Freon?
No, I don't think we are anymore.
But I just went right along with that mouse story. I'm confused.
Your voice is starting to make me think I might be dead.
Does my voice sound weird?
Your voice sounds like death to me.
I think this is what my voice always has sounded like. Is this my voice?
I think I breathed in a lot of that Freon now that I'm thinking about it.
Is this my voice? Okay. Let's.
I feel like I'm waiting in heaven.
Oh, what's it look like? What do you see?
I see teak.
Well, that's this room. That's not heaven. That's this room.
Oh, well, then we're here.
No, we are in the east wing of your home. I think that we should open a window.
Probably not until I get a little bit further into this electrical work.
Oh, okay.
We should wait a little bit. I'll let you know when the window is good.
And is there going... What's that?
I've heard that if cold air hits a stew or soup, it can spoil it.
Oh, the mouse is too. But no, but Marcel, I'm not. I don't want to. I don't want to cause any argument. But I think
the mouse isn't there. That's right.
Yes, we established that the mouse was not.
I forgot.
Not real. I'm worried if the battery power of my recording devices.
Okay.
Is there not going to be electricity during the interview? That's fine if it's not.
I bet we can get it on. How much do you want on?
Well, I'm just an outlet, I guess.
I'm an evening
person. It'd be nice to see. As well.
Okay.
So like a lamp? Maybe one lamp, one outlet?
Can you do your phone?
What am
just
I doing?
Just sort of wave your phone around. Just sort of hold that to whatever you're doing. There's a light on there.
Yeah, but I've been having a battery issue with this as well. Like, we'll do this. I'll just hold it.
How old is your phone?
It's a 4.
Oh my God.
Is that...
How do you have the courage to leave your house with that?
It's a struggle every day, Marcel.
Oh, my God.
I'll hold this above us.
What are we on, iOS 13?
I don't know.
But your phone lasts for 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's horrifying.
Let's go. I have questions here.
Ending in the middle of directions.
I have more questions prepared. Let's get on track. I am sweating.
Do you drive yourself?
I have a car. But it is not currently working.
But you don't have a man who drives you?
When I ride the bus.
That is a positive outlook on life, my friend. That is amazing that you're able to make that leap there.
Well, it's like a chauffeur that I share.
Yeah, my tax dollars paid for.
Well.
I mean, let's...
Well, they're also paying for this interview. Technically, this is public radio.
That's right.
Okay. Let's get into the writing, Marcel. People write about a lot of things. Yeah, mm-hmm. Do you think it could be dangerous to write about the crimes that you've committed? Do you think that you may get into trouble for telling your story?
Oh, not at all, Dana. The average statute of limitations for most larceny felonies is 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not quite sure there's a statute of limitations on that jacket. Oh, my God, that is terrible. I think my brain might have been blocking that out. Perhaps that's what the mouse was about. Perhaps something whimsical to take my mind off of that terrible, terrible jacket you're wearing. Where did you say you went to university?
I didn't. I went to Oakton Community College.
Oh,
and
community college, gross. Gross. I never understood why they wanted to put community in it. Why highlight it? You might as well call it poor school. Oh, look at me. I'm getting my associates from poor school.
I think that there is a value to
the community. I'm thinking about going to full college, but I think I'll get a certificate first.
From
poor school. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could take the jacket off. I've been sweating a lot, and I have a bit of a sweating issue, and I think it would, quite frankly, be worse.
What is the... Are you not sweating enough or too much?
It's certainly too much at all times. Mm-hmm. And it's only exasperated when the temperature is as high as it is in your home right now.
Yes.
And then
I thought it might have been the pungency. I thought it might have been that because it does.
Well,
I mean, it smells like we're in a Penn Station right now. It's bad.
I like Penn Station.
It's good when it's food.
Yeah, well, the artichokes and that sort of thing. Okay. Mm. You have written 14 different memoirs now. Most people only do one. Do you think you are coming to an end of your story? Do you think there are more to come?
Oh, absolutely. I believe I'm just getting going. I mean, sure, I've mentioned my exploits in Luxembourg, and I've regaled my readers with the calamity that is Tuscany in spring, and I've regaled my readers with tales of high-stake blimp races from Munich to Hong Kong, but that's just the surface. I've barely shared with you the mysteries of Daytona Beach or the danger and excitement that is Akron, Ohio. Mm. And I could do several books alone on the lovers I've taken in Boise, Idaho. Oh, the women of Boise, Dana. They are something else. Strong, sturdy, passionate women. Their lust overwhelming. You know, in certain circles, there's a saying, mind the humidity in Boise.
Yes.
It's there's a grip to them. I think it's from all the potato
I've
work.
Never,
that
is that?
Okay.
Do you have company?
You know what? Why don't we get up? And why don't you grab those needle-nose pliers and
okay.
I'll get this
okay.
saw here.
I also have right my here. Recording equipment
yep,
here.
Just leave that. Oh. Give it a quick wipe.
Okay.
Give it a quick wipe.
Okay. I have a
is
handkerchief.
Is your name on any of it?
No, I don't.
Just
it's,
leave it then. Let's go.
It has the razor. Are we, no, we're
quickly.
Going now? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Night jog.
All right.
Night jog. Let's
here we
go.
Hello. Good evening. My name is Marcel Guimont, and I'm the world's foremost gentleman cat burglar. But to friends of Evening at the Arthur's, you may call me Toby Moffat of Tampa, Florida. I'm here to read from my new book, The Devil in Dixie. It's a summer memoir that I wrote because I'm running out of things to write books about. And I have to pay for my ex-wife's pool. Share some passages. This is from chapter 2. It was early summer in Georgia. Agent Turner of the CIA was threatening to revoke my probation if I didn't agree to investigate and possibly steal an item the CIA believed to be a religious mind control artifact. They were under the impression that some backwoods yokel preacher was using it to start a cult outside Savannah. So here I was infiltrating a mixer at the local evangelical church. The man I was looking for went by the name Pastor Rick. This is a common tactic used by scam artists and charlatans. The dropping of the last name and inclusion of your profession gives a sense of familiarity. Oh, look, I know you. We're on a first name basis, and I know what you do. Aren't we friends? Oh, I'm on to you, Pastor Rick. The mixer was being held in a church gymnasium. The carpeted floor muffled any white noise normally generated by silverware and footsteps. The silence was unnerving. There was nothing to distract me from the horrendous choices of attire. The men were the sort that feel like getting dressed up means putting on your good jeans. And the women all seemed to be adhering to a look that I would describe as something from Target with buttons. The constant opening of the gymnasium door had made the room hot and muggy. Though quite spacious, the mixer was beginning to smell like body odor, and most of the children had this awful sour dairy breath from sucking on pouches of yogurt out on a hot church playground all morning. Right when I had just put enough of the polycotton blends and exposed roots, in walked Pastor Rick. He was a tall man with a lean build, dark hair, and long gangly arms he seemed to like to drape around people as a sign of friendship. He wore a dark suit and a ribbon tie. He made me think very much of Abe Lincoln, actually, except instead of a tall hat, he wore a crown of old dried thorns. The crowd went wild when they saw the crown. Pastor Rick bent forward for the crowd to part the crown. He kept inviting them all to touch the Lord's thorns. When I saw how casually he implied that he was in possession of Jesus' crown of thorns, I was quite impressed. Until now, the craziest thing I had seen during a con was watching an Irish forger lie to the head of the Black Dragon Triad about being able to make the world's best Hunan beef. He did this in an attempt to sleep with the man's daughter. But this was incredible. I had never considered telling people I owned some of Jesus' stuff. I knew I was looking at a worthy adversary. All right, this next part is from Chapter 5. It's meant to have many parallels to the airboat chase through the swamp in Chapter 3, as well as the hostage standoff that makes it most of Chapter 4. It's Chapter 5. I was in the library where the man from the Craigslist ad had agreed to meet me. He'd only used the alias Norman during correspondence. Norman had promised me that he had the information I needed to crush Pastor Rick's dark congregation. I was excited to finally meet a man of action in this moldy ashtray of a town. When he walked in, I realized that Norman was not an alias at all. This was one of the most Norman-looking dudes I'd ever seen in my life. He had wispy eyebrows and a slight chin. His hair was pulled back in a thinning ponytail. He wore glasses. It was just awful to look at. It was a lot. It was a lot for an initial conversation. Norman sat down and stared at me with intensity. "I'm not sure you're ready to know what I know," he said with conviction. Without even giving me any time to respond, he slid a folded piece of paper across the table to me. This was terrible form at an information handoff. You take time saying cryptic things and allude to a possible double cross before you go right into the agreed upon exchange. And some of us might have rented a costume, or perhaps they're wearing their best fake mustache. You have to savor these moments a little bit. This was very unprofessional. I turned the folded paper over to see it was actually a pamphlet on nihilism. I almost immediately grew angry and began folding up the newspaper I brought from my disguise. This is it. This is what is going to open their eyes and help them see that their religion is bullshit. None of this means anything, Norman said excitedly. In that moment, I lost complete focus on the mission. But you don't really believe this, do you? I asked Norman. Of course I do. It's the only thing that makes sense, Norman asserted. Then why did you even bother to tell me? I mean, shouldn't you not even care if I know? Like, if nothing matters, then what does it matter if I know you're a nihilist? Norman interrupted me. I don't think you understand nihilism. And I replied, see, there you go again. It seems to me that you shouldn't even care if I understand or not. I mean, how are we even able to talk about this? How do nihilists care enough to name their thing? Norman walked out on me. This part is from chapter 15. This is a later chapter in the book. This chapter is really representative of some of the events in chapter 6. There are heavy parallels to the reveal in chapter 7 that Pastor Rick is in fact an alligator man. Also, there are some pretty interesting callbacks to the missing uranium in Chapter 7, as well as the jetpack drag race and giant snake battle that took up most of Chapter 13. It's from Chapter 15. The spirit journey that the snake venom had sent me on was coming to an end. From that, I could gather I had driven the airboat all the way down the coast of Daytona Beach. It was there that I decided to get breakfast at a rather uninspired beachside bar and grill. 98% of the restaurants in Florida are beachside bar and grills. There was an old ship's wheel on the wall that apparently for about an hour I was trying to drive the bar down the panhandle of Florida. Back to my home in Tampa. It didn't help that one of the local drunks kept saying that I would never get her past Fort Lauderdale. When I came to, I was sitting in front of an appetizer sampler platter and a bucket of Bud Light limes. It was good to be back in Florida. The bartender was a classic Florida girl, She had blonde hair, golden skin, and a body that can ruin a marriage during a family trip to Disney World. I asked this girl name, and she replied, Misty. Many a southern succubus bear the name Misty. I noticed that she was missing a tooth. Not one of the front ones, but one of the premolars off to the side. Missing teeth is a hallmark of southern charm. If you're going to, lose a tooth off to the side. That way, only when you're smiling do people see how hard your life is. In that moment that I was lost in her lower class grin, I lowered my guard long enough to be knocked unconscious from behind. All right, this next chapter is a flashback to my childhood. It represents the second enlightenment that the snake shaman had prophesied after I completed the snake bone puzzle box in chapter 10. I saw myself standing in the middle of the street in my childhood neighborhood. I was 9 years old. My brother Kenny was there too. Kenny had passed away a few years later after this date. He had progeria, a terrible disease that rapidly ages children, leaving them trapped in the shells of old men. Kenny was often gaunt and pale during our youth. I realized then that this vision was Kenny and I was during the middle of one of our first scams. We would dress Kenny in traditional Spanish mission clothing, and then he would pull one arm into his shirt, and with the other he would hold out a lantern and then wander around the neighborhood saying, Mami que camino es el hogar, which is Spanish for Mommy, which way is home? Once a neighbor was convinced that they had a little boy Spanish mission ghost haunting them. Once they convinced that they had a little boy Spanish mission ghost haunting them, my 12-year-old sister would go in a couple days later pretending to be an Eastern European mystic little person. Who could exorcise their poltergeist. She had terrible rhoticism that really sold the bit. Go away, little ghost. Go away, little ghost. In that moment, I began to regain consciousness and now realized what I had to do to defeat Pastor Rick in the underground Alligator Man Empire. For the conclusion, please buy my book. Thank you. I've been Marcel Guimard.
That, loyal listeners, was Marcel Guimard. I would like to thank Marcel for taking the time to speak with me, even if it did turn out to be, well, I guess it was just another one of his adventures. This will conclude the second season of An Evening with the Authors. I'd like to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret for hosting our live show on the first Tuesday of every month in Indianapolis, Indiana. If you would like to see one of our live shows in Indianapolis or another city, you should follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Fake Authors and on Instagram at Fake Authors INDY. I'd like to thank Eric Salazar for providing our theme music entitled Soul Search. And more than anything else in this world, I'd like to thank you, loyal listeners, for spending an evening with the authors. I am Dana Glass. Good night.